This is Age of Treason Radio. On the White Network.
And Daddy always smiled, took me by the hand, saying someday you'll understand. Well, I'm here to tell you now that you never mother's son. You better learn it fast, you better learn it young, for someday it never comes.
With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Jewish Crypsis, Nose Jobs, and More, Part 1. It's tied together with the previous installment, what I talked about the last time, the name game. And it's also tied with what I'm going to talk about after this subject, which is the conflation of Jewishness with religion. All of these topics are, you find them tangled together whenever you examine what Jews have to say about these things. You find them all mixed together. They're all related. I'm trying to tease them apart here and talk about them separately, but it's not easy. And I just wanted to say that by way of introduction here to what I'm going to talk about, maybe point out some examples of it as we go along. Recall that Crypsis is a term from ecology. It's a biological term. And it refers to the ability of an organism to avoid observation or detection by other organisms. Things like names or even clothing or other outward appearances can be changed relatively easily compared to physical appearance. Your body and your face are relatively difficult, if not impossible, to change, at least until relatively recently. There are general, overall differences in physical appearance between the races of man, and in particular between whites and especially the Northern European, Nordic, Aryan subset of whites and Jews. The Aryan look is tall, slim, light-skinned, blue eyes, or light eyes, blonde hair, and in particular, straight and narrow noses. For Jews, it's almost entirely in contrast to all of that. Short, dumpy, sallow skin, dark eyes, black hair, and that hair is often frizzy or curly, and they refer to it as Jewfro. And most obvious, the large and misshapen nose, or what they refer to as hook nose, the infamous hook nose. And I would say this is a case where the exceptions only prove the rule, which is to say that Jews and others who want to look Aryan, want to look white, will make a big deal about it if they have blonde hair or blue eyes or both. And if you pay attention to them when they do that, you can see that what it is that they're essentially gloating about how having those attributes allow them to pass, how they can fool white people, and how foolish white people are for being fooled by such outward appearances. These Aryan appearances that I've described epitomize what's considered at large, even by people who don't have these appearances, to be the epitome of healthy, fit, or athletic looking. It's a good image, in other words. It's aesthetically pleasing and desirable. Now, I want to make the point again. These physical differences are racial in that they're heritable, genetic, physical traits. They're visible biological differences. As an example, and it's fairly difficult to find these, especially nowadays, an example of an honest description of the Jewish look, or how Jews look physically, how they're different from the Aryan ideal. I want to cite a children's storybook called Der Giftpilz. This is a book that was published by Julia Streicher in 1938. Let me see if I got that right, 38. And Der Giftpilz means the toadstool or the poisonous mushroom. That's the title. And just one chapter of it, I'd like to read a short section here. By the way, Julia Streicher was executed as a war criminal in 1946 for telling truths like this about the Jews. He really had no position of power in the National Socialist regime. He only published this. He did not write it or illustrate it. It begins, "One can most easily tell a Jew by his nose. The Jewish nose is bent at its point. It looks like the number six. We call it the Jewish six. Many Gentiles also have bent noses, but their noses bend upwards, not downwards. Such a nose is a hook nose or an eagle nose. It is not at all like a Jewish nose." "Right," says the teacher, "but the nose is not the only way to recognize a Jew." The boy goes on. Now, this is a boy reciting in class what he's been taught in this class. The boy goes on. "One can also recognize a Jew by his lips. His lips are usually puffy. The lower lip often protrudes. The eyes are different, too. The eyelids are mostly thicker and more fleshy than ours. The Jewish look is wary and piercing. One can tell from his eyes that he is a deceitful person." The teacher calls on another lad. He is Fritz Müller and is the best in the class. He goes to the board and says, "Jews are usually small to mid-sized. They have short legs. Their arms are often very short, too. Many Jews are bow-legged and flat-footed. They often have a low, slanting forehead, a receding forehead. Many criminals have such a receding forehead. The Jews are criminals, too. Their hair is usually dark and often curly, like a Negroid's. Their ears are very large, and they look like the handles of a coffee cup." The teacher turns to the students. "Pay attention, children. Why does Fritz always say many Jews have bow legs, or they often have receding foreheads, or their hair is usually dark?" Heinrich Schmidt, a large, strong boy in last row, speaks. "Every Jew does not have these characteristics. Some do not have a proper Jewish nose, but real Jewish ears. Some do not have flat feet, but real Jewish eyes. Some Jews cannot be recognized at first glance. There are even some Jews with blonde hair. If we want to be sure to recognize Jews, we must look carefully. But when one looks carefully, one can always tell it is a Jew." And I think that concludes the section I want to read from that. A couple of points to make about that is the opposite of crypsis, or the counter to crypsis, and an organism that's pretending to be something that it isn't, trying to hide, is to discriminate, to be aware of exactly the subtle traits that set one thing apart from another, one group apart from another, set us apart from them. And so there is nothing wrong or immoral about Germans teaching German children how to recognize aliens that are trying to hide amongst them. And hide, I think, is the key word there. As I've said before, with passing is a fraud, essentially. That's the best way to understand it. Somebody trying to get away with something that's wrong. And they know it's wrong, and that's why they're hiding. If they were being honest, they would be out front with who they are instead of trying to hide it. There is a stereotypical Jewish appearance, and Jews have written far more than anybody else about it. you can find, for instance, in Wikipedia, a page titled Stereotypes of Jews, that physical features is one of the sections of that page, and it describes it this way. Physical features in caricatures and cartoons, Jews are often depicted as having dark skin, curly black hair, large hooked noses, thick lips, dark-colored beady eyes, and wearing kippahs. That's that skull cap that they wear. Jews are commonly caricatured as having large noses or hooked noses. Jews are also portrayed as swarthy and hirsute. There's a couple of traits there that I hadn't mentioned, that Der Giftpuls didn't mention, the hirsuteness and the kippahs. But otherwise, it pretty much agrees with the Der Giftpuls. The difference here is it's this distinct difference that you see between a fairly straightforward description, like the National Socialists or Julia Stryker's book portrayed, just telling it flat out the way they see it, and these modern-day contemporary descriptions of the phenomena, which try to have it both ways. It's fairly obvious that these differences are real, but the Jews don't want to admit that it's real, because then there goes the crypsis. It blows that out of the water. So they're recognized, they're outed, and then they can't do what they're doing as well. So they deny it. At the same time, they talk about it, and it comes across as this, the word stereotype has this connotation that it's imaginary, it's make-believe, it's only stupid, crazy, evil people believe that these stereotypes actually exist. Except in the case of Jewish appearance, it's real. And the best evidence of that is the nose job and the Jewish nose. To fix the Jewish nose, they get nose jobs. A Jew named Sandra Gilman, who's sort of an expert on this subject, an expert apologist for Jews on this subject, singles out the nose as the key physiological sign of the Jew. And that makes sense, because they're physically different, and the face of all of a person's physical difference is the most noticeable thing about them. It's if our brains are keyed in to look at other people's faces first. And on the face, the nose is right at the center. And so even if it weren't such a dramatic difference, our brains, our perceptions make it a dramatic difference, even a slight difference in nose, because it's right there, right at the center of what we pay attention to. So to the extent that the nose is the key physiological sign of the Jew, the nose job is the key sign of Jewish crypsis. The nose job, the rhinoplasty, it's called, is the technical term for it, was a type of surgery that was pioneered by a Jew whose name was Jacques Joseph. There's the name game, non-Jewish, non-recognizably Jewish name. And he was working in Germany. I think it was 1885 that he performed the first nose job on a Jew. So a Jew operating on a Jew. And continued to develop it from about the turn of the century on into what it has become today. More than the nose job, Jews drove the development of plastic surgery in general, this kind of alteration. They call it plastic surgery because it's altering the appearance. It's not a surgically necessary, it's not medically necessary for better health. It's just to change the appearance. And Jews drove this both on the supply end and the demand end, both as doctors and as patients. Now, the nose stereotype, as a subset of these physical appearance stereotypes, it is played up by the Jews themselves. Another one of these rare instances of non-Jew talking about it, I found, was a recent article by Lasha Darkmoon. And the point of her short essay is to point out that it seems that Jews let me just quote her here. She says, many Jews, far from shrinking from mentioning their noses, never lose an opportunity to reinforce this particular stereotype by referring to their own noses negatively if there is no one else around to do so. When Jewish cemeteries are vandalized or swastikas are found defacing walls, the culprits on numerous occasions have turned out to be Jews. And she cites a couple of them. So it is with the legendary Jewish nose, a protected species of stereotype deliberately nurtured and kept alive by organized Jewry for propaganda purposes. I disagree with that last part there, that it's deliberately nurtured and kept alive, at least in this nefarious sense that they're trying to use it for propaganda. I have a slightly different understanding. I think that how do you hide what can't be hidden? How do you hide something that's obvious? It's too obvious to deny the Jewish nose. And the three main ways I see that the Jews have used to avoid observation as, an understanding of this as crypsis in crypsis terms would be is, number one, they embrace and exaggerate the difference. They own it. And that, in effect, preempts others from talking about it. They basically take up all the air and all the space talking about it. And number two, which goes hand in hand with number one, is they make it taboo for anyone else to talk about it. They literally make it illegal, if they can, by calling it inciting race hatred or whatever. And, ultimately what they did to Julius Streicher is what they'd like to do to anybody who speaks against them. And number three, and this is what we're going to get into a little bit more coming up here, is plastic surgery. They alter it. And that previously, before about 100 years ago, a little more than 100 years ago, they couldn't do that. But now, because of the improvements in technology and medical science, they are able to do that. So those are the three main reasons. And so to Lasha Darkmoon's point, and she talks about the taboo herself in her short piece. I see those two things working together, that Jews exaggerating, talking about the hook-nosed Jews, serves to, they own it, they take it over, so they get to talk, be the ones who talk about it, and then on the other hand, discouraging others from anyone else from talking about it. So it lets them drive the agenda or drive the conversation about it, where the conversation goes. Now there's, like most other aspects of Jewish identity, we see this duality in the Jews, and it springs in this case specifically from these diaspora Jews, the ones that are trying to appear to assimilate, partially assimilated, but aren't really assimilated. They have a Jewish identity, a strong sense of themselves as Jews, and yet they feel this need to change their appearance. They see this big honking nose as an announcement to the world of their Jewishness, and they don't like that. They don't want to be seen as Jews. And one point I'd like to make here before we go too much farther is, when Jews get their noses changed or any other aspect of themselves changed physically like that with plastic surgery, primarily it's not because they want to stop being Jews. It's because they want to stop being recognized as Jews. Now, there's this conflict between the reality of the Jewish nose and the duality of the Jewish reaction to it, and the doublethink that they engage in dealing with the reality of the Jewish nose. I've already cited the example from Wikipedia, which I think is pretty typical of the way they talk about stereotypes, and the Jewish nose is just a stereotype, implying that it's not real, implying at best that if they acknowledge that Jews actually do talk about the Jewish nose and act on it to get surgery to fix it, that to the extent they do that, it's just the excuse they make is, well, Jews are just responding to the imaginations of anti-Semites. You know, it's anti-Semites that make this up and then convince Jews to react to it, as if it's anti-Semites that rule the world and tell the Jews what to do. But Jews are aware at some level of their consciousness of this, these visible physical differences, and most obviously their nose. It's just that if anybody else talks about it, or if it's talked about in a negative way, they get very defensive about it, and you can see that they see it's bad for the Jews to be outed. It's indicative of a guilty mind. Now, the fact that it's taboo is pretty clear empirically from the fact that when you go to look for people talking about Jewish noses and plastic surgery nose jobs, what you find is lots and lots of Jews and not very many other people. In fact, this is interesting relative to the name game, where you may be reading an article that's not in a Jewish publication aimed at specifically at Jews, and it doesn't, the author is, doesn't have a Jewish sounding name. But sure enough, if you look into it, if you Google their name and look them up, some biographical information about them, you find out they are Jewish. And that's the general trend, is that the general tendency is that the only people who feel comfortable talking about Jewish appearances and Jewish noses and nose jobs are Jews. And so that can be used in a way to catch them at the name game. Too. You see so many, in fact, most of the names I've seen writing about it are not Jewish names, not recognizably Jewish. But one is, Sander Gilman, who I've already mentioned, is sort of an expert on this, a prolific Jewish author, intellectual, really a prolific apologist. He's Jewish. He looks a lot like that Lord Chief Rabbi King Poobah, Jonathan Sacks from Britain. He's got a large nose, glasses, he's balding, and he's got this gray beard. Looks just like Sacks. He's sort of the embodiment, though, of this duality that I've been talking about, because his books, while he writes about these Jewish traits, and one book in particular that I'm going to talk about, these Jewish physical traits of their body, at the same time, he kind of excuses it or blames it, fobs it off on the anti-Semites. And certainly that's the reading that other people get from his work when they describe it. In particular, his book, The Jew's Body, which was published in 1991, the description of it on Google Books is this brief synopsis. Let me read. Drawing on a wealth of medical and historical materials, Sander Gilman sketches details of the anti-Semitic rhetoric about the Jewish body and mind, including medical and popular depictions of the Jewish voice, feet, and nose. Now that makes it sound like this is all imaginary, doesn't it? It's all just an anti-Semitic canard. That there is such a thing as a Jewish voice, feet, or nose, except that when you read what Gilman actually writes, he's pretty much acknowledging that it does exist. It's just that there is this duality. And, whenever there's a duality, people either hold both ideas in their mind or they choose whichever one they feel more comfortable with. I talked a bit about the differences in psyche, in the Jewish brain, the Jewish thinking. Back in some of my earlier podcasts about 8 months ago now, last December, Race and Genetics Part 4 and Part 5, I talked about, in particular, Fritz Lenz, the German scientist prior to World War II and during World War II, who noted the racial differences in mental traits. Specifically, I talked about the Jewish fondness for Lamarckism, and the Nordic fondness for objectivity. And what Fritz Lenz said was the Jewish inclination toward Lamarckism, which you can understand as a plasticity, biological plasticity, or anti-racism, the Jewish fondness for anti-racism, is obviously an expression of the wish that there should be no unbridgeable racial distinctions. And you see the same thing here in this whole duality, the double think about Jewish noses, that this, they have this physical trait, but they want it to change. And actually they have now the technology to change it. And at the time, as the counterpoint, the modern day counterpoint to Fritz Lenz was, I cited this Jewish apologist, Raphael Patai, who had written a couple of books, very much in the same vein as Gilman. His books, Patai's books, were The Jewish Mind and The Myth of the Jewish Race, talking about all of these same things that the anti-Semites talk about, or the National Socialists talked about, but in the end, to excuse it away, to basically cover up the fact that Jews are different, calling it a myth. Now, Gilman had a very interesting chapter as part of his book, The Jew's Body. But the chapter was called The Jewish Nose. He focused specifically on the nose, and he's since pulled that chapter out and published it in other places. I could never find a PDF that had text that I could copy and paste very easily, but I was able to transcribe a short paragraph from the introduction of a version of this chapter that he published elsewhere, and he titled The Jewish Nose, Are Jews White, or the History of the Nose Job? And so that ties together the fact that there is a Jewish nose, that the nose job is related to it, and it's also related to this whole are Jews white question and their alienation from whites, the distinction from whites. Now, this first paragraph starts out, when the Lubavitcher Manus Friedman, the dean of the Bias Chana Women's Institute in St. Paul, preaches that, quote, Jews are different, let's accept it and be thrilled, unquote, one can only agree. But his sense of difference is cast in a language that itself is contaminated with the sense of a negative Jewish difference, a difference of the Jewish body. He continues, quote, for 2,000 years we have come denied our uniqueness. I obviously made a mistake there in the transcribing that. We have denied our uniqueness. We have tried to come to the world as if we were normal. Well, guess what? The world hasn't bought it, and they never will, unquote. And Gilman's reaction to this is he writes, according to Friedman, Jews aren't normal. And I want to point out about this is that Friedman is the Lubavitcher Jew, the open Jew, the Jew who dresses differently and basically announces to the world that he's a Jew. Proud to be a Jew, wears it on his sleeve. He's really only arguing that Jews are different, that they're unique. They're separate from other people. It's actually Gilman who's being dishonest. He's the one who's the Crypsis Jew. He's the one who fears that being outed as a Jew is bad for the Jews. And so he's dedicated his career to writing books talking about what can't be denied, but effectively denying it. That's what I mean by a Jewish apologist, somebody who's crawls all over the information, but only to shape it, only to spin it, and to spin it for dishonest reasons, not to clarify, but to obfuscate. So we're getting to the end here of part one, and let me summarize a bit of what I've talked about here, that the Jews are different and distinct from whites in physical appearance, for sure. In previous installments, we talked about how mentally and ideologically they're different, how they see themselves as different. In this exploration of the Jewish nose and nose jobs, we're going to see, we've already seen a little bit of it, that Jews are aware of this difference, even if whites aren't. And we see how Jews act about it, and they act very squirrely and very guilty about it. But the fact is that they know that there's such a thing as Jewish nose, and they want to change it. I'll talk more about that the next time.